Sergeant Brabs, mm-hmm. Reel 1. Can you tell me, was there a tradition of military service in your family background?
No, no. My father was in the First World War, but so were millions of other people. He was when that was over, he was back at his normal job, and I don't think we ever had anybody or close relatives in the forces.
What was his normal job?
My father. He was an engineer's driller.
When you were growing up and at school, did you do any sort of military training?
Well, if you can call being in the Church Lads Brigade military training, I suppose the answer is yes.
What sort of things did they do?
Well, they did it's going back a very long time, but we used to attend parades, church parades and that sort of thing, and on the special religious days. And we used to have a football team, and then in twice a week, you could go down and play various games, or you know, football, and that in the proper time. It was a sort of well, like we have today. A club. Yes, yeah.
Did your father ever talk to you about the war? The First World War?
No. He was getting on a bit, and he wasn't called up until the second part. There was only, I think, a couple of years to go. Before that, you know, the armistice.
You were growing up in the 1920s, the 1930s. Mm. Mm. Can you remember if at any stage you thought to yourself there is likely to be another war?
No, I don't think I ever thought in that direction at all.
What were you doing once you'd left school?
And I worked in a at a clothing firm. It's a John Barron's, the very old clothes manufacturers, very highly, you know, Austin Reed stuff, and that's what I was doing, right up to going into the forces when I was called up.
Did the outbreak of war come as a surprise to you then in September 1939?
Yes, I think it did. I think there was lots and lots of people thought that it would never get to that stage, and I think I was with them, particularly after the First World War hadn't worn off people's minds and that sort of thing. No, I didn't think there would be another war.
What happened when you were called up? What did you have to do?
I was called up, and I was put into the Leicestershire Regiment. This was rather funny because there were four groups of us, the Leicesters, one going into the Leicesters, one going into I've forgotten the other. There's what? Duke of Wellington's, yes. And something else. And these for there were groups of 200, and these groups were all posted to Halifax, to the depot there, and the idea was that they eventually would go out to to Jerusalem, to the to Palestine, it was. I have a difficulty now. Every name of everything has changed, but in those days it was Palestine, and it was, as you know, given to us from the First World War, and we patrolled it and we looked after it, and we were going to go there, even though the war was on. I don't know whether they were thought that, you know, to take their people, the fully trained soldiers from there into the war, and we would go down and do whatever we had to do there.
Do you know why you were put into the Leicesters? Did you have any contact with the Leicesters? Oh,
no, none whatsoever, no. As I say, there were four units, and they were making them up with these numbers, you know. And then they'd have got four complete numbers, and we'd have gone out then to Palestine. But, unfortunately, Italy came into the war, and the Mediterranean and the Suez Canal was all cut off to us.
When you were called up, do you remember what happened to you when you arrived and reported? What did you have to do?
We were billeted in an old church school in Halifax, and there was tutors there. There was an army corps there, but these were old chaps who'd been in the previous war, you see. And then when we reached a standard of where they could let us loose, I suppose, we were going to go and interfill these places in the different regiments, and then go out, as I said, to our job would be looking after Palestine during the war.
What did these old instructors teach you? What did you have to learn in all this training?
Well, the drills and rifle teaching and that sort of thing. And but it was only on a very primitive scale. They weren't going out onto the. I don't think he ever went out onto the. Shooting courses.
What did you think of the uniform you were given?
I can't really remember, because we had we went for ages without uniforms, and the ones we got were pretty much the same as had been issued at the end of the last war. But I think we got used to them, put them in. We moved round. We moved all round Halifax. We came into. We had a spell. At where the race horses are, where the race courses are, Audrey. We went to Liverpool, and then because we were sleeping on the canal bank and all these parts of the of the race course. And then came the day when we were all going to move. And nobody knew where we were going, of course. And there's all kinds of rumours going round. But what it was, that we were going, we set off in, it was a liner, you know, not a military, not a naval thing. And we set off, all the four units of us, all that was there. And we were taking a lot of children that were being
America.
Going to America, you know, for evacuation. So they were in our convoy, and then when we'd sort of seen them safely across 2/3 of the way, we turned down the Atlantic into our next stop was at Cape Town. We stopped for refueling and all that sort of stuff, but we weren't allowed to go abroad, to aboard. Until we got to South Africa.
Was the liner escorted on that part of the voyage when you'd turned away from America? Did you have escorts with you, or was the liner going on its own?
The liner was going on its own, yes. Yes, altogether. Mm.
Did you have any alerts for submarines or enemy aircraft on that voyage?
No, not really. They did put into one small port, which it escapes me what it was, and just got essential things that the ship required. We didn't go ashore. And then the next stop was in South Africa.
What was your life like on the ship? Where were you sleeping?
Oh, it was not bad. We slept. It was summertime, you see, so we all got hammocks. Those who wanted to take them below could take them below and sling them from the roof. But those who were a bit more hardy or a bit more fresh air, you could go out and put them on the deck, providing you found a spot that everybody didn't fall over you. And that's how we got to there.
What did you do? Did you go on deck or did you go
below? I went on deck, yeah, because I thought it was a bit more healthier than people dropping the, chucking the boots about from... from these ceilings and that.
Earlier on, when you've been doing your basic training, your introductory training, how did you take to the discipline? Did you find
that hard?
Well,
it wasn't too severe. We were more excused for lots of things because we were only learning. But, and as I say, we hadn't really had a proper base. We'd been on the move all this time from Halifax, all round Halifax, as I've said, and this, that, and the other, and then going across the Atlantic, then coming down to there. So we hadn't really. We did duties on the ship, but they're nearly all cleansing duties guarding the odd doorways where only the officers went through and that sort of thing. Nothing really drastic, to learn.
What sort of chaps were there in your group of recruits who are going to the lessons? Did you know any of them before you joined, or were they all over the place?
I didn't know them, but being Leeds, and all of the same age, 19, most of us were in the same trade, which was clothing. I had comrades from Montague Burton's, some from somewhere else. I worked at John Barron's, which did all the posh stuff, and so we all had we all merged easy. There was no there was no problems at all.
Did you go ashore at Cape Town?
Yes, I did.
What happened to you there?
What happened to me there? Well, everything in the morning had to get done, you know, they tidied up and all this, that and that. Then after lunch, you could go ashore until 10 o'clock. But not everybody, it was more or less in turns, see, until we got farther and farther there, and then you could go down as you wished. And we found that there were lots and lots of the ladies of the town there meeting us with motor cars, and I got taken on several picnics into the hills. They had food for us and everything. And of course, some of the cynics said, "Well, this was to keep us out of the native quarter." But it was very good while we were there. And strangely enough, I think it was on the last night that we were there, we said, well, look, we won't go with anybody if they ask us if we want to come to a picnic. We'll have a look around here ourselves, because we haven't seen it all. And we thought that was a good idea. And we walked around the streets and looked at what was being sold. And we got up to a clothing shop. And we were looking in the window and making comparisons with this, that and the other. There was about four of us. And the chap came to the door, the owner of the shop. And we told him, you know, we're looking at these things and that. He said, we're in the clothing trade, and I was in Leeds. And I said, "Where did you work?" He said, "Oh, it's a place you wouldn't have known it. I'm sure it must have been shut down by now." He says, "John Barron's." I said, "Well, I've just come down from John Barron's this afternoon." So he said, "Right." And what had happened was he asked us all if we'd go to supper with him, after the... where we'd be, you know, after the afternoon. And we had a meal there, and then we got back to the ship.
You mentioned the food. What was the food like in the army and on the liner?
The food on the liner was quite good, because I know that... and we had lots of soft drinks and that sort of thing. When they stopped, we were... In fact, some of these big companies put drinks and sweets and all that on board the ship for nothing, as their contribution. And then we just carried on. We went up the Suez
Canal.
Yes, we went up to. Right up to the Suez Canal. Yes, we were meant there again. You see, we were meant to get off before then, but the war was changing all the time. There was the Italians in, and they were sweeping down. They closed the Suez Canal. They'd done this. They'd done that. We couldn't land there. We had to land a bit farther down than the Red Sea and get up round the back there. But then we finally got to what was to be our place, home for a while. And then what we do? We used to go out training and all that sort of thing.
When you were on the voyage up towards Egypt, were you able to keep in touch with what was going on in the war? Did you get news somehow?
I think we were all more or less. We had been going to be a bit dropped off at before we got to where we did. There was some trouble going off with I can't think of it. In the states that come down south from the top of the Africa.
Syria? What,
pardon?
Syria?
No. Where the... there's a real character in charge down there. I'm sure it'll come to me.
Do you mean Somalia?
Or
Kenya?
Kenya. There was a few more, weren't there? But can't find out.
Did you never get to stay with you?
Eh?
Stay with you, George, because you'll don't just.
You went through the Mozambique Channel.
Yes. Yeah. And, as I say, which separates Africa and Madagascar. Here the sea was so calm that we could see the reflection of the ships on the water, like looking into a mirror. We followed the coastline up the east coast of Africa and finally arrived at our destination, which was Port Suez, at the southern tip of the Suez Canal. Here we were to disembark after a journey by sea of over 6 weeks. It took most of the next day to get out, to get us and our equipment and our baggage from the ship and safely ferried across the harbour to the quay. When everything and everybody had been accounted for, the baggages were loaded onto army trucks. So here we were in Egypt. I don't know what we expected to see, most of our expectations being created for us by Hollywood films and biblical pictures from childhood, or of sheikhs mounted on camels wearing beautiful robes and headdresses, riding across golden sands. I must admit it was a bit of a surprise to me to see that most of the Egyptians were working on the harbour and wearing Earl cement bags with holes cut out in the top to get their heads through, and holes cut out at each side to get their arms through. A bit of difference, I must say, but only the first surprise of the many I would see before long.
What were your first impressions when you got out of the port and were going off to your depot? What did you?
Well, we didn't really know where we were going at.
How did you move? Were you moving on foot or by train or in motor vehicles?
Motor vehicles, mostly. Mm.
Can you remember where you went, where your first camp in Egypt was?
Yes, it was... there was... all the ones coming from home were in camps down by the Suez Canal. There were some little towns there, and as we were working and doing, you know, making up the camp and this, that, and the other, and then. We were all going up in parties of about 200, and put with a battalion until everybody had been absorbed. Then when we got up there, joined. We were the Leicesters, completely the Leicesters.
Did you do any training while you were in the camp waiting to go out to the battalion?
No, not really. No. There were. See, this was a sort of just a fall back place, and it was to become the base for all the Egyptian campaign there. When we arrived, it was about a mile long. When at the end of the war, when we came back that way, it was 14 miles long. And we then went up to the up, and as I say, there was going up in batches of about 200 a time, and the sergeant majors were there, and they were saying, "Well, look, what I want you to do now, get together, get with who you want to be. When you've made up your minds who's going with who, this, that, and the other, then we'll put you with the proper company," see, which they did, which worked out. People got together with who they wanted to get together. And, our job then was to start digging in and making a proper guarded safety all the way around the camp.
Where was it that you joined your battalion of the Leicesters?
It was they said at that time an infantry battalion was about 800 strong and consisted of four infantry companies, A, B, C and D, and a headquarter company, which was a specialist company. We were told to get out with our particular pals, which we did, and marched off to the nearest respective companies. I found myself with most of my cronies in A Company and remained in A Company for the rest of my time abroad. Each company composed of three platoons or 30 men, and we split up again into the various platoons and so on. Each platoon consisted of three sections of about 10 men each, and we shared ourselves out with the rations. Each of the companies was commanded by a corporal, or sections were commanded by a corporal or a lance corporal, and the platoon was commanded by an officer, usually a second lieutenant, with a platoon sergeant. The three platoons of A Company were spread out between the sea and the single coastal road. All were on the same task, digging defensive positions. There were slit trenches with fire steps which connected up and dug out where we lived and slept. There was a decent sized tent which was dug into the ground and served as a company headquarters and the company cook house, which was open. So did you get anything from that?
But do you know where it was that you were doing this digging in?
Where
it was, yes.
Where it was Sidi Anish.
Sidi Anish.
Mm.
Okay.
It was the end of the railroad from up to the desert. I can't think of the names of the places in
Alexandria.
Pardon?
Alexandria.
The one in Alexandria. It was it ran up by the side of the canal. Mm-hmm. I'll look it up after.
Do you remember which platoon you were in?
Yeah.